Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Lamed Dalet. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the mark Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 15 lines from the top of Daf Lamed Dalid. We have a quote from the Mishnah which says, Shilem, the shomer opted to pay for the item entrusted to him that was stolen, the lo rotzo lishava, and did not want to take the daily oath that would have exempted him from pay. The topic heading that we see on the side, we call the nosei. We see that in our margin where we've written kedei lizkos bekefel, in order for the bailey to gain the rights to collect the double payment that the thief will be obligated to pay upon being caught. Haim hashomer tzorich lishalim befoil. Does the bailey have to actually pay the owner before the thief is caught? Or must speak she'omar she'shalem, that he said, that he indicated his willingness to pay without actually having transferred a cash payment to the owner? As we continue in our Gemara, we are assuming, of course, that you are very familiar with the Gemara from our previous shiur, so that we're, in a sense, we're simply continuing the topics that we saw at the beginning of the perek in the Mishnah. So, the Gemara continues now, Omar Reb Chiya bar Abba, Omar Reb Yochanan, Lo Shilem, Shilem Amish. The Mishnah that said that the shomer, the bailey, will be entitled to collect the double payment upon paying. In other words, if the shomer pays, don't read pays as actual payment. Elokevon shomer, once the shomer verbally indicated to the owner upon the theft of the item that was entrusted to him that I am going to pay you for it. Once he says, Shahareini Mishalem, Afalpi Shalosh Shilem, simply by saying, I will pay, even without an actual cash payment for the item, he is entitled to collect the kefel when the thief is discovered. Tanan, we raise a question. Shilem Velo Rotzo Lishava. The Mishnah says, if the shomer paid and didn't want to swear, then he would be entitled to the kefel. Shilem in. Actual payment, yes. Lo shilem lo. But short of an actual payment, no, he would not be entitled to the kefel. That's a problem for Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara responds, Amos Seifa. Well then, state that which is found in the continuation of the Mishnah, where it says, Nishba v'lo rotza l'shalem. He will not be entitled to the kefel if he takes the option of swearing without the willingness to pay. Taima de lo rotza. Why is he not going to get the kefel according to the seifa? Is because he didn't have willingness to pay. Ha rotza. Had he had willingness to pay, afa bishaloshi lem, even without actual payment, the shomer would have been entitled to receive the kefel payment. And that's like Rabbi Yochanan. So if you emphasize the early part of the Mishnah, you find a question on Rabbi Yochanan. If you emphasize the continuation of the Mishnah, you find support to Rabbi Yochanan. Elo meha leko lemashma mino. Rather, from here, from our Mishnah, from inferences drawn from the Mishnah, we are not to conclude anything. In other words, you read the Mishnah at face value without trying to draw inferences. Hence, we don't have any Kasha on Rabbi Yochanan, we don't have support to Rabbi Yochanan from the Mishnah. However, Tanya Kavosei to Rabbi Yochanan, we have a braisa that supports Rabbi Yochanan. Hasocher Pora Mechavero V'nignava, a person who rented a cow from his friend and it was stolen. V'omar Halo Hareini Mishalim V'eini Nishba, and he says, I am willing to pay for it and not swear. V'achakach Nimso HaGanav, and then the Ganav was found. Mishalim Tishalei Kefala Socher, the double payment will be made to the renter. And all of this, why? Because he said, the Omar, he, as we dashed underlined two lines up, he simply indicated his willingness to pay. And that was enough for him to gain the rights to receive the Kefel payment. As we continue in the Gemara, we notice a series of diamonds that appear in our Gemara text and double underlines on the side under the Nosei topic heading / Mibne structural note. We indicate that the diamonds introduce Shomrim Shonim, different kinds of Baileys. We've alluded to them in the past. You have the unpaid Bailey, the Shomer Chinam, the paid Bailey we call Shomer Socher, etc. And these different Baileys, Hatoinim Tainus, they make claims, and the claims you'll see are double underlined in our Gemara text, Shemechaivois Oisom, that as a result of their claim or the story they tell us, it actually obligates them to pay. Ha'im kainim bekach zchus lekefel. Does that entitle them to receive the double payment? Im nimsa ganav, if the thief is found. This is certainly coming on the heels of Rabbi Yochanan that said if a shomer indicates his willingness to pay, by saying, I will pay, that entitles him to the kefel. Here, the shomer isn't saying, I will pay, but the shomer is saying, as a result of my conduct, I am now going to be obligated to pay. Does that entitle him? We'll put it this way. The shomer is volunteering information to us that he is really, he was lax on the job. Or he, as a result of whatever happened, he's going to be obligated to pay. Is that the same thing as saying, I am willing to pay? And then, when the thief is eventually found, would the shomer be entitled to receive the double payment? The Aleph and Beis that will appear later in the Gemara, those are Shnei Lishonis Rav Papa, two versions of Rav Papa's teaching, Be'inyan Shoyel, regarding the borrower, Shoymer Hareini Mishalem, who says, I will pay, Im Bekach Kena HaKefel. In the case of the Shoyel, will be referring to him the example of Rabbi Yochanan, where he says straight out, I am willing to pay. Now, we go to the Gemara. Omar Rav Papa, Shomer Chinam, Sheomar Poshati, a Shomer Chinam who volunteers the information to us, telling us, he comes forward by saying, I was irresponsible in my task of watching. Poshati, I was irresponsible. And we know that even though a Shomer Chinam in general is exempt from all other kinds of events that were fates that befall the item he was entrusted with, we know that the Shomer Chinam is exempt in the event of theft, of loss, but he's not exempt in the case of reckless behavior. And he comes forward and tells us, I was reckless. Makne leik feila. That entitles him, says Rav Papa, to receive the kefel payment in the event that the thief was found. I should point out that when he says, I was reckless, and as a result of my reckless behavior, the item was stolen. So even though in general theft is something which would be grounds for the exemption of a shomer chinam, not so if the theft was a result of his irresponsibility. It's like leaving the door open in broad daylight, and that's allowing the thief to easily enter and steal the item. That would be an example of reckless behavior. So once he tells us I was reckless, then the kefel payment that the thief will have to make will be to the shomer chinam. Why? The iboi poter nafshe b'gneva, because he could have exempted himself by a claim of gneva, of claiming that it was stolen. So we see from here that even though he had a way of exempting himself, and nevertheless he came forward and said, I am guilty, that obligates him, that obligates him to the pay the principal value, and as a result he's entitled to receiving the kefel. We see from Rav Papa that which Rashi had explained in the Dibur HaMasal HaSeicher Pora V'Nignava, that by coming forth with information, with a claim that I was, in this case, I was irresponsible, but we'll say telling us the truth, that the theft took place as a result of my recklessness, he gains the rights to the kefel, because in potential, he could have issued a false claim that would have exempted himself. He could have said that it was stolen under normal circumstances, which would have exempted him. And now another example of that. Shoymer Socher, Kevon Sheomar Nignava. If the paid bailey comes forth and says that it was stolen, which is an event that obligates the Shomer Socher to compensate the owner. And he comes forth and says it was stolen. Maknilek Velo, that grants him the rights to the double payment. The Iboi Potar Nafshe, had he wanted to, he could have exempted himself with a false claim of Bishvura Umesa, that the animal broke and died. Those are examples of onus, of events beyond his control, for which a paid bailey ordinarily is actually exempt. But once again, you see, he tells us what appears to be the truth. He says nignava, and he thereby obligates himself. And as a result of obligating himself, when he could have exempted himself through a false claim, that is enough for him to gain the rights to the kefel. We continue now with Shoel, the borrower. Shoel Shomar, someone who borrowed an item. And we know that a Shoel is obligated to compensate the owner for the loss of the item that he borrowed under almost all circumstances. All of the circumstances that would have exempted the other kinds of baileys, theft, loss, onus, circumstances beyond one's control, with regard to the borrower, he is obligated. There's one case where a borrower would be exempt from having to compensate, is if while using the item that he borrowed, in the course of normal use of the item, if we speak about borrowing an animal, in the normal course of using the ox that you borrowed to plow with, while plowing with it, the animal dropped dead. So that you have a specific case of onus, of an event beyond his control, but it was in the course of his use of it. After all, someone borrows an item in order to use it. And if while using it, the borrowed item ceased to exist, in the case of an animal, the animal died, a shoel would be exempt. So now we have a case of a shoel who comes forward and says that the item is no longer. I should say he comes forward and as regarding an item that he borrowed, he says, "I am willing to pay for it." Shoel shoimer hareini mishalem lo makni le kfeila. A shoel that says, "Listen, I borrowed an item and I'm willing to pay for it." In reality, the item was stolen from the shoel. He is not going to acquire the rights to the double payment when the thief is found, even though he came forward and said, "I'm willing to pay for it." According to the rules we've been seeing along the way, we see that various shomrim are entitled to the double payment when they obligate themselves because they could have exempted themselves. In the case of the shoel, through what claim could he have exempted himself? B'meisa machmas melacha. As we explained before, the shoel could have claimed that the reason your animal is no longer is because it died in the course of my use of it. That would have exempted him. However, meisa machmas melacha lo shchiach. That phenomenon of a borrowed item dying in the course of its use is uncommon, is unusual. So unusual, uncommon events cannot be used as potential claims for exemption. I emphasize the term potential claims for exemption. If a shoel would come forward and say it was meisa machmas melacha, so he's making a claim of exemption. And in cases like that, we know that that doesn't entitle the shomer to kefel in the first place. Ika diamri, Omar Rav Papa, shoel nami. And here we have an opposite approach. The shoel also, kevon sheomar hareini mishalim, once he indicates his willingness to pay for the item, and in reality the item was stolen and a shoel is obligated for that, and the shoel says, "I'm willing to pay for it," makni le kfeila, he is entitled to receive the kefel payment, the iboi poter nafshe b'meisa machmas melacha, because if he wanted to, he could have come forward with a claim of exemption. And as we've seen already from the beginning of Rav Papa's approach, that claims that could have been made, even if they're not reality, even if they're false, but claims that could have been made that would have resulted in the Bailey being exempt from payment, and the Bailey opts for making a claim that obligates him to pay, or willingness to actually pay, that entitles him, the Bailey, to the eventual kefel when the thief is discovered. Omar le Rav Zvid, Hachi Omar Abaye. Rav Zvid, referring to the shoel, Rav Zvid quotes what Abaye says, shoel ad she yishalem. The kefel would not be entitled to the shoel until he actually pays. Now, you'll notice with our markings, we've dashed underlined ad she yishalem. Contrast this with the dashed underline, three lines above at the end of line, sheomar. Whereas Rav Papa said the shoel can gain rights to the kefel by expressing willingness to pay, according to Abaye, he would actually have to pay. The Gemara asks, what is the reason or the motivation for this version of Rav Zvid's point that the shoel does not gain the rights to the kefel until he actually pays, in contrast to Rav Papa? So the Gemara asks, my taima, what is the reason for this? Answer, Hoyil v'chol hano'o shelo, since a shoel gets full benefit, he borrowed an item, didn't pay out, didn't lay out anything for it, and he gets the item for his own use, all hano, all benefit is his. B'dibura lo makni le kfeila, with mere speech, the owner of the item, namely the lender, is not going to transfer or give over his rights to the kefel unless the shoel, the one who borrowed, actually pays. Tanya Kavose de Rav Zvid. And here we have a Tanaic source that is cited by the Gemara to support Rav Zvid's approach. Hashel poro mechavero. Someone borrowed a cow from his friend, v'nignava, and it was stolen. V'kida mashel v'shileim. And the shoel came forth and paid. V'yachakach nimsa haganev mishalim tishlumi kefel la'shoel. Since the shoel paid, when the thief is found, the double payment is made to the shoel. Lalishna kama de Rav Papa, this Tanaic source, vis-a-vis the first version of Rav Papa, who said that the shoel, through speech, does not get kefel, that was the aleph we saw above in the two versions of Rav Papa. So, in the first version of Rav Papa, a shoel who says, I will pay, does not get the kefel. So, this source, Vadai lo havi tufta, is certainly not a refutation to that, because according to this source as well, the shoel doesn't get the kefel through mere speech. So this source is comfortable for the first version of Rav Papa. Lalishna basra, according to the second version of Rav Papa, where it was stated that the shoel, by merely saying he's willing to pay, gets the kefel, and this source seemed to say otherwise. Lema tehevei tufte. Shall we say that this Tanaic source is a refutation of the second version of Rav Papa? According to the second version of Rav Papa, the shoel gains the rights to the kefel through mere speech. Omar Loch Rav Papa. Rav Papa base, in other words, the second version of Rav Papa will answer, Mi alimo mi masnisin, dekotoni shileim v'ukimno bi Omar. Is this source any stronger, any stronger an objection than the Mishnah? After all, the Mishnah said shileim. The shomer pays, and then he gets the kefel. For ukimna, and we set it up. We already explained the Mishnah. We saw Rabbi Yochanan explain the Mishnah by saying omar, meaning not actual payment, but willingness to pay. So too over here, Ochanami. So too in the Brisa over here, the same approach. Be'omar, he said he was willing to pay. The Gemara says, how can you compare the reconstruction of the Mishnah to what you're trying to do in the Brisa? Me, dummy. Are they similar? Meaning, the Mishnah, which we reinterpreted from Shilem to Omar, willingness to pay, and in the Brisa, where it said v'kidam hashoel v'shileim, and try to convert that into omar, me dummy. Are the cases of the Mishnah, the examples of the Mishnah and the Brisa similar? Hasam lo kotani kidim. In the Mishnah, you don't find that verb form of came forward and paid. In the Brisa, though, you do see that word. He came forward, which indicates that he actually paid. So in the Mishnah, there was room for reinterpreting the word shilem to mean, as Rabbi Yochanan said above, willingness to pay. Willingness, hareini mishalim. But in the Brisa, where you saw the term v'kidim hashoel v'shilem, How can you convert that into Omar Hareini Mishalem? The Gemara answers, in fact, you can do that. My Kidem. What does Kidem in the Brisa mean? Kidem vi Omar. He came forward and said. The Gemara asks, Ha midekotani gabi soicher veomar. We have a little arrow to the side of the Gemara text. You can see there's a Tanaic source that we referenced earlier. And in that source, it said veomar. The gabi veomar means, and the shomer in that case said he would pay. The gabi shoyel, and in the Tanaic source regarding the shoyel, it says kidein. So here you have a contrast in terms and verbs. You have in the when you want to speak about when the Tanaic source wants to speak of, wants to mention oral willingness as opposed to actual payment. So the Tanaic source uses the word the omar in the and when it when you don't see that presentation, but rather you see v'kidem hashoyel v'shilem, that indicates otherwise, that it's not a mere oral willingness to pay, but actual payment. So, from that contrast, let's read that line again. Ha midekotani gabi socher v'omar, v'gabi shoyel kidem. You notice we also have a little star to the side of the Gemara text indicating the line in which you saw v'kidem. Shma mino dafka kotani. So we can conclude that the terms are dafka, like from the lashon, from the expression miduyak. They're precise. The sources speak in precise terms, whereas by the socher, willingness to pay, expressed willingness to pay is enough. Not so in the case of the shoel. The Gemara says, Midi Gabi Hadodi Tanya, are these two sources in fact taught together? If the two sources were taught together, meaning they were part of one Tanaic source, then you can say that within the framework of one source, change in language is deliberate and is precise. But if they're not taught together, if they're taught as two separate Tanaic sources, then it could very well be they're actually authored by two different Tanoim, and the use of language in one cannot be contrasted with the use of language in the other. It's, we'll say, stylistic differences, but not of any legal nature, not with any legal ramifications. So that if they're not taught together, then that still leaves room for me to say, in the case of the shoyel, in order to support the second, second version of Rav Papa, where statement to pay, willingness to pay, was enough. That option remains open as far as this Tanaic source is concerned. So where do we stand? Are the two sources, the case of Socher and the case of Shoel, taught together or not? Shailinu l'tanoi debei Rabbi Chiya u'debei Raboshia. This question was posed to the authors, the editors of Brisa literature from the yeshivas of Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Oshia. They, Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Oshia, were considered authorities and their Tanaic sources authoritative. So they presented this question: are the cases of Socher and Shoel taught together? The Amri, and they answered, Gabi Hadodi Tanyon. In fact, they are taught together. And being that that's the case, we are left with a challenge or a refutation from the Tanaic source involving the Shoyel on Rav Papa version Beis. The next piece of Gemara opens up with a statement, Pshita. The following is obvious. Omar Eini Mishalem, a Shomer who said, I'm not going to pay. V'chozar v'yomar Hareini Mishalem. And then he says, I will pay. And, of course, all of the points that were mentioned above then fall into place. I'm going to pay, and then if the thief is found, the Shomer will be entitled to receive the kefel as per that which Rabbi Yochanan taught above. So that is what sticks, his second comment. Once again, in this case, where he at the outset indicates, I'm not going to pay, and then he turns around and says, I will pay. So here he said it. He said, I will pay, and he's thereby entitled to the kefel. So what about the following? And now, structurally, I want to point out that we start a series of questions. You'll notice we have a nosei / mivneh heading, and we've written where the triangle is featured, sidra shel 11 shelos. The sidra is a series of 11 questions, beinyan shomer shishilem, regarding the topic of a shomer, a bailey that paid. There are many questions, as we said, and this will take you down, almost halfway down, Omid Beis. So the Gemara continues, Ela, what about this case? Omar HaReini Mishalem, he opens up, the Shomer opens up with the statement of willingness to pay. The Chozar V'Omar Eini Mishalem, and then he had a turnaround and said, I'm not going to pay. My. What do we say then? Mi Amrinon Mahadik Kodabe, do we say that he is reversing himself and therefore his second statement of Eini Mishalem is what we're left with? Oidilma b'milsei kait, or rather he is remaining with his first intention of paying, d'chuyei hu d'komadchilei, and he's simply pushing off, maybe we'll call it a delay tactic, in the meantime, but his willingness to pay, his obligating himself to pay, really stands. And in the meantime, so he's saying, I'm not going to pay right now. That's a question. We're not answering this question. In fact, we're going to have the series of questions ending up with teiku, with the questions being unresolved. So how, now we go to the second question. Omar HaReini Mishalem Umeis. Shomer says, I'm willing to pay. But he died. The Shomer died before the payment was made. The Omru Bonov, the sons, the heirs of the Shomer, said, Ein Onu Mishalmen. We're not paying. My. What is the din now? Mi Amrinon, do we say, Mahadir Kohadri Bahu, that they are reversing, and that their reversal is a reversal, and as far as the kefel payment is concerned, it will not be made to them. Oy dilma b'milse davuon kaimi u'dechiyei hu deka madchule. Or, rather, they are maintaining their father's willingness to pay, and hence subsequent entitlement to the kefel. And as far as what they said, that was of we're not going to pay, it was only a mere push-off tactic, a delay tactic. Third question. Shilmu bonemai. Let us say that the Shomer's sons, the Shomer who said he'll pay, he died. The sons actually paid. My. Does that entitle them to the kefel? Motsi omar lahu. Do we say that the owner can say, Ki aknoi kfeilo, when I was willing to transfer the rights to the kefel, to the double payment, lavuchon, that was to your father, deoved li nayech nafshoi, he did me a favor, he watched my item, he nayech nafshoi literally means he created a pleasant feeling for me, he accommodated me, he served me, but lidid chulo, but unto you, no, you didn't. You're the sons of the man. You didn't do me any favor. You didn't watch anything for me. Oy dilma lo shna. Or maybe we don't make a distinction between the father to whom the owner was willing to transfer the kefel and the sons to who also would be entitled to the kefel. After all, they paid, didn't they? They paid before the thief was found. Shilem Labonim, a fourth question. Here's a case where the owner of the item died, and the Shomer himself, he's alive, the Shomer himself paid to the sons of the owner. Shilem Labonim Mai. What happens now? What about the kefel? Motsu Omri Le. Can the sons of the owner say, Ki Akni Loch Avuna Kfela? There's another girsa that reads, Ki Akni Loch Kfela Avuna. When was the kefel transferred, or who transferred the kefel? That would have been our father. The avdis lay nayach nafshe. You did a favor to him. You watched his item. So, because he received the favor, our father was willing to transfer the kefel payment. In the meantime, though, our father died, and as far as we are concerned, aval anan ledidon, but we unto us lo, you didn't do any favor to us, so the kefel payment is not something that is due to you. You're not going to receive it. Oy dilma lo shna, or maybe we don't make any distinction. Number 5. Shilmu bonim lebonimai. What would be the din of children to children? In other words, the owner died and the shomer died. Here you don't have any nayech nafsha svora. You don't have anyone here who did a favor, received a favor. So what would happen in this case where the sons of the shomer paid the sons of the owner? It's number 6. Shilem mechtsa mai. Regarding this question, number 6, of shilem mechtsa mai, we look at Rashi. He says, shilem mechtsa mitchilasoi, from the outset, Omar, he said, hareini mishalem mechtsa. Velo Yoser, I'm paying half. I'm willing to pay half and no more. What's interesting is that Rashi is explaining the Gemara a little bit beyond the literal translation. The Gemara itself says he paid half, and Rashi takes it to, stretches it a little bit to Rabbi Yochanan's point. He said he was going to pay half and no more than that. What's the din? Is there half of the kefel entitled here? Shoal, another question. Shoal shtei poros. The shilem achas mehen mai. Let us say someone borrowed 2 cows and came forth and paid for one of them. Rashi, shoal shtei poros, im timtza lomar lo koni mechza. If, regarding the previous question, number 6, you say that by paying half, that you're not entitled to receive half of the kefel, what about this case where you borrowed shal shtei poros v'nignavu, and they were stolen, v'yomar hareini mishalem achas, and the shoel said, I will pay for one, v'lo omar, and he expressed willingness to pay, and he didn't say the claim that could have exempted him, namely meisa machmas malacha. Rashi continues, mahu liknois kefel shela. Can the shoel receive or be entitled to the double payment of one of those 2 cows? Mi aminon kevan depora shlema shilem kona. Do we say since he paid for a whole cow, as opposed to question number 6, where he paid only for half? Here he paid for an entire cow. Odilma came from the Trevayu Chad Pikadon Havu, or maybe since both cows were part of one entrustment, one borrowing, the Eino Mishalim es Shteim, and he's not paying for both of them, for the entire unit of borrowing. Lo Akni Lake Fela, he is not entitled to the Kefel Sharei, who Nifsad Al Yodo, because the owner does experience a loss through this, through his unwilling, through the Shoel's unwillingness to pay for both? That is question 7. Now we go on to question 8. Shoal min hashutfin v'shileim le'echod mehen mai. A person borrowed a cow that was owned by partners, and he paid the half of the cow to one partner. He paid, as far as the shoel is concerned, he paid the full amount to one partner. On the other hand, he didn't pay for the whole cow. So you have the this element of full payment when you look at the person who received the payment, but you don't have the full payment when you look at the item in question. So that is the issue that has to be dealt with. Another question. Shutfin Shishwalu. Two people borrowed one cow. In other words, let us say they had a field that they owned in partnership. And these partners in the field borrowed a cow for plowing that field. And one of the two partners that borrowed paid, we'll say, his portion of the cow that was stolen. That's the question of Shutfin Shishwalu Vashileim Echodman. One of the two partners paid. Does he get half of the kefel? Because after all, he paid the full amount that was obligatory upon him. We continue. Shoal min ho'isha v'shileim l'baylo mai. Here, Rashi explains. The Rashi that we're looking at is about halfway down the narrow column of Rashi. Shoal min ho'isha para shel nifsei maluk. A woman entered marriage bringing with her from her father's home a cow, and Rashi describes it as nichse maluk. What is nichse maluk? What does that term mean? Shakeren shalah, the principal value of the cow belongs to the woman herself. Vaperos labal, benefit that that cow produces, profit that that cow produces, belongs to the husband. Now, in our case, someone borrowed the cow from the woman. And the cow was stolen, and the shoel, instead of claiming meso machmas malocha, he was willing to pay, and he paid the value of the cow to the husband. Does that shoel gain kefel rights? Do you say that since the principal does not belong to the husband, so the payment made to him is of no consequence in terms of gaining the kefel? It's not considered a full-fledged payment. Or do you say that since he is like an executor over her properties, and he has the profit benefits from it, he is considered an owner, and therefore payment made to him is a full-fledged payment entitling the borrower to the kefel? And the final question. Isha shishala v'shile bailomai. Let us say, here you have a woman who had property that she brought into the marriage, nichse maluk, property that she has she owns the principal of it, fruit that property yields belongs to the husband. And so the cow was borrowed to cultivate that field, the nichse maluk. The cow was stolen. The husband took money out of his pocket and paid the owner, and then the thief was found. Does the owner get the kefel? Does the husband, I should say, get rights to the kefel for the cow that was borrowed to plow the wife's field? So the Gemara ends off Teku. That remains unresolved. And now we start a new topic. That's why you can see we have a slash mark in the Gemara. A firebox marking appears very shortly around Rav Huna. And on the side we have a topic heading. And we indicate that it's a long topic. It goes until Daf Lamed Hey Amud Aleph. In other words, you'll see that this topic continues till not only the rest of this Amud, but continues on to the next Amud, Daf Lamed Hey Amud Aleph, Shvuas Rav Huna. The topic we can entitle the Shvua that Rav Huna imposes, that obligates. And what's that? Afalpin Sheshilem. Even though the shomer paid, instead of taking the oath that would have exempted him, nevertheless, there's still another oath. Hashomer boy lishava she'eno b'rishuso. The shomer has to swear that the item that I was entrusted with, that I claim was stolen but I'm willing to pay for it, it's not in my possession. The Gemara points out, why, if you're willing to pay for it, why would you have to swear that it's not in your possession? The owner's getting his. So the Gemara will tell us in a moment, because we're suspicious, that, yes, very nice you were willing to pay for it, but it's a payment that you made because you coveted the item. You desired that item, and in effect, you yourself we can say stole the item and were willing to pay for it. Of course, that would be forbidden, strictly forbidden. You can't take other people's items without their expressed agreement, and as a case would be in a sale. You can't take other people's items even if you're willing to pay for them. So in our case, the shomer, who seems to be such a nice guy, who's coming forth and willing to pay, and instead of swearing to gain exemption, but he's willing to pay for it. Maybe, as we just said, and this is what Rav Huna suspects, maybe he set his eyes upon it, the shomer set his eyes upon that entrusted item, desiring it for himself, and that's why he paid for it. As we will continue in the Gemara, after Rav Huna presents his din, a bow tie shape will appear, and under our mivneh, our structural note on the side, you can see these represent kushyos al din hanal. These are questions that will be raised on Rav Huna's teaching. The first question appears here, and it's presented with a long question marking on lamed hey omid aleph. A second question will appear about a third of the way down from the top of the page. You'll notice a question that we call number 2, Roman numeral number 2. First, the din. Now the Gemara, Omar Rav Huna, Mashbien Oisoi, Shvua She'eino B'rishuso. Rav Huna's comment reflects upon the Mishnah, where the Mishnah taught, Shilei V'lo Rotzo Lishava. So even though the procedure as per the Mishnah indicates if the shomer opts to pay and doesn't opt for taking the oath, so he will then be entitled to the kefil. From the Mishnah, on a pure Mishnah level, it seems that there's no further shvua. He paid and didn't want to swear. So that's true. Rav Huna, though, tells us, even though he's not going to be swearing the standard oath imposed on Baileys. If you take, for example, a shomer chinam, an unpaid Bailey, if he wouldn't be willing to pay for the item that he claims is stolen, he would have to swear in order to gain exemption. That he swears that he was not reckless with it and that it was stolen. The Mishnah, just to repeat, gives you the option of paying. Gives the Bailey the option of paying and not swearing. Rav Huna says, even though he's not going to swear the formal oath that we just described, he nevertheless has to swear Shvua She'eino B'rishuso. he swears that the item is not in my possession. So that you have a shomer coming forth to telling the owner, here, take the money for your item. It was stolen, but I'm willing to pay for it. And Rav Huna says, he has to swear, though, that it's no longer in his domain. My time out, why does the shomer have to swear that it's not in his domain? After all, he's paying for it. The Gemara says, Chayshinon Shemo Einov Nosan Bo. We suspect, the suspicion arises in our mind that maybe the shomer actually still has it. It was never stolen. And he is making off with it, even though he's willing to pay for it. And as we said before, that's something that would be strictly forbidden. Therefore, we want to gain insurance that that did not happen. So he is obligated to swear, even though he's paying for it, he's obligated to swear that it's not in my domain. As we said before, this sugya is a long sugya. So just let us point out, like we did earlier, there are two questions that are raised in the course of the Gemara on Rav Huna. After the first question is raised, there will be a series of four answers to the first question. Then, as we indicated, the Gemara will then present a second question on Rav Huna. So we have a first question followed by four answers. Meisvei. Now, we have a long Tanaic source, and truth be told, one can easily lose sight of what the question is, because we're going to be exposed to quite a few details dealing with a controversy between a malve and a love, where there was collateral involved. In the course of this source, toward the end of the source, a shvua, an oath, will be reported on, the need to take an oath. And as the Gemara develops the issue of the oath referred to in this source, as a result of the discussion concerning the oath in this source, will eventually come to raising a question on Rav Huna at the top of Daf Lamed Hey Omed Aleph. So with that, we'll say disclaimer in mind, and the need to review what the question is at the end of this story. Let's now go into the Gemara. Meisvei, Hamalva es chaveru ala mashkein. Someone loaned money to a borrower, and in exchange for the money extended, the lender received collateral. That's called a mashkon. The ovar a mashkon, and that mashkon got lost. The issue throughout this source, and there's, you'll see there are claims made by the borrower as to the value of it, and claims made by the lender as to the value of it, and the value of the mashkon that is no longer around is lost, will have direct influence the amount that needs to be paid as far as the loan is concerned. Marking wise, you can see we have the tainos, the claims made by each party. Let me point out that you'll see there are four double underlines in this source. The first two are where the malve opens the claims, opens the various claims, and this in the second part, claims 3 and 4, where the love initiates the claims. This will become much clearer as we go through the various examples. So now the mashkon is gone, the collateral is gone. The omar loy, and the malve says, sela il visicha alav, I loaned you in exchange for that mashkon a sela. A sela is a denomination of currency. And shekel hoya shaveh. The value of that collateral was a mere shekel. Was a shekel is half a sela. What's the malva then claiming? You still owe me money. Even though the mashkon you gave me is lost, you still owe me money. And in response, the borrower, the loiva, says, Loki, not so. Ela sela ilvisani olav, you loaned me a sela, and sela hoyoshavet. And it was worth an entire sela. The collateral, in effect, covered the entire value of the loan. And I am not obligated to pay you anything. We call that kofer bakol. He's denying, at this point, owing anything. Potter. Potter means the borrower is exempt from swearing. We should point out that in the rules of loans and borrowers and their denial, if a borrower denies totally owing the loan, we say he must be telling the truth, and because otherwise a person wouldn't have the audacity to deny a total denial for someone who did you a favor. He loaned you money. So if you're denying the entire loan, you must be telling the truth. However, if there's a partial denial, meaning I don't owe you everything you're claiming, but I do still owe you part, that's called moida b'miktsas. And moda b'miktsas results in a shivua, in an oath that the borrower must make. And according to, many sugyas in the Shas, that is a shivua doraisa, based on the concept, for those who are familiar with Eruv Parshis, Kosuv Kan, and the concept of based on the pasuk of Ki Hu Zeh, without getting into details. That would be a shvua that the borrower would have to make. When someone is deemed to owe money and they make a partial confession, that results in a shvua. In this case, though, is there a partial confession? No. The borrower is saying, I don't owe you anything. You lost the mashkon that corresponded to the entire value of the loan. Example number two. Sela hilvisi cholav. Again, the malve initiates and says, I loaned you a sela. Shekel hoyoshove. And the mashkon that I lost was worth a shekel, was worth half. Vahalo omer. And the loive responds, the borrower responds and says, Loki, not so. Not like you're saying, Ela sela ilvisani olav. True. You loaned me a sela. Shloisha dinirim hoya shave. The mashkon was worth 3/4 of the loan. Not like you're claiming that the mashkon was worth only half the loan. It was worth 3/4 of the loan, and I owe you only 25%. You can see from the coins mentioned in this source, dinarim, another kind of coin. There are 4 dinar in a sela. I now owe you, since the mashkin was worth 3 of those, I owe you only 1 dinar. Ah. Chayav. When he says, shloisha dinarim hayashave, he is in effect saying, but I still do owe you 1 dinar, which is 1/4 of the sela. Chayav, he is obligated to swear to that effect. Here you have an example of modeh b'miktsas, partial confession. Now we go to section 2 of this source, example number 3. Here the lova initiates, sela hilvisani olav. You loaned me a sela, and I gave you a mashkon, shnayim hayashove. The mashkon that I gave you was worth 2 sela. Another, I gave you something twice the value of what you loaned to me. So you, the lender, owe me money. V'halo omer, and the malve responds, Loki, not so. Elo sela hilvisi cholav sela hayashove. I loaned you a sela, and the total value of the mashkon that you gave me was the same thing, was a sela. So I don't owe you anything. Potter, the malve, who in this case was the one who was being claimed from, he's exempt because he is totally denying. Example 4. Sela ilvisani olof. Once again, the lova initiates, saying, you loan me a sela in exchange for the mashkon that I gave you, shnayim hoyoshove, and the mashkon that I gave you was worth twice the amount of the loan money you gave me. And the malva, the lender, responds, loki, the mashkon you gave me wasn't worth twice the value of the loan. However, it was worth more than the value of the loan. Elo, sela, hilvisicholov, I loaned you a sela. Hey dinrim hoyashova, it was worth, the mashkon that you gave me was worth 5 dinar. In other words, I gave you a loan worth 4 dinar, and you gave me a mashkon worth 5 dinar. Mashkon got lost. I owe you a dinar. So that's called moida b'mitzas. So chayav means he has to take the shvur because he's moida b'mitzas. Now, according to how we've presented this, the last comment we made was that the malve, who is partially confessing, he's conceding to the love, I don't owe you a full sela, I mean, I don't owe you 4 dinarim, I owe you 1 dinar. The malve is moida b'mitzas. If you're moida b'mitzas, you have to swear. Now the Braisa goes on with a seemingly odd question. It says, mi nishba, who swears? So the Gemara will iron this out when we get to the Gemara, but in the meantime we're going to translate. So we ask, who swears? Answer, mi shahapikadon etzlo, the one who had received possession of the entrusted item. A mashkon was given by the love, by the borrower, to the malva, to the lender. So who is holding on to the entrusted article? The lender. So who swears? The one who is in possession of the mashkon, who received possession of it. And why does he swear? Let's just repeat that and make sure it's clear that that you understand the question. And why does he swear? Why does the malva swear? So, if we would not read on in this source, you would say, well, the malva swears because he was moida b'mitzas. Isn't that the last thing we taught? But that's not what it says here. It says, the malva swears, he's the one that received the pikadon. Shemo yishova zeh, because if not so, but rather if you would say that the love, the original owner of the mashkon, would swear, what we're afraid of is if he swears, v'yotzi halos apikadon, and then after the love swears as to the value in question, the malva will whip out the mashkon and make a mockery of the lova, showing us the mashkon, how it's worth an amount different than that which the lova would have sworn, would have claimed. So in order to prevent that situation from arising, where the lova swears and the malva, the lender, whips out the mashkon, making a mockery of what the lova's claim is, we say we want the malve, that he should swear. Now, as we said, I'm going to repeat what we said before, and the Gemara itself will spell this out. This last discussion has the malve swearing for the simple reason that we want to prevent the scenario of a mockery from arising. Now the Gemara. Ahei means, on what is it going? Specifically, the source spoke of, the source said, mi nishba, who swears? Well, we had 4 examples in this source. That question of who swears, what's it going on? Ilemo aseifa. If it's going on case number 4, v'tepukle deshvua gabi malvehi deha kamoidi mixas hataina. As far as example number 4, the description of the shvua in this at the very end of the source would not be relevant, namely the need for the malva taking the shvua as described by the source was to prevent the lova from looking bad. Well, that's not the reason in example 4 that the malva swears. The malva swears in example 4 because he was moida b'miksas. He, the malva, the lender, partially admitted. He said, I don't owe you the 4 dinar you're claiming from me. I owe you only 1 dinar. Elo Omar Shmuel Aresha. Shmuel explains that the last section of the Tanaic source, namely Mi Nishba, is going on the Resha. Resha means the earlier part, the first part, meaning something before case 4. So the Gemara's Maya Resha, there were 3 cases before that. So what do you mean it's going on the Resha? What case? Answer, Asefa the Resha. It's going on the end of the beginning. Now, with our markings, if you were looking carefully, you notice we had Roman numerals 1 and 2. Sefa de Resha means the end of the end, namely the second example, the end of the beginning. The beginning was Roman numeral number 1. The end of that section was case number 2. And the Gemara now quotes the whole section from above. Sela hilvisicha olof. Shekel hoya shove. The malva said, I loaned you a sela, and you gave me a mashkon that was worth a shekel, was worth half. In other words, you still owe me a shekel. Vahalo omer, and the lova says, Loki elo sela uvisani olof. You loaned me a sela. Shloisha dinim hoya shove. It was worth not an entire sela. I still owe you money, but not as much as you said. I owe you 1 dinar. Instead of what you're claiming for me, a shekel, which is 2 dinar, I owe you only 1 dinar. So there's partial confession. Chayav. Chayav means he, the borrower who partially confessed, is obligated to swear. Dishvua gabi lovehu. Technically speaking, the oath is upon the love because he was moida b'miksas, partial confession. And now, as far as the Tanaic source above, when the source said mi nishba, and it went on to say misha pikon etzlo, you know what's happening? The Omer Rabbonah, the rabbis intervene, and they say lishtave malve, the malve shall swear how much it was worth. So with this rabbinic intervention, they're in effect removing the shvua from upon the borrower who was modeh b'miksas, and saying to the malve, you know, you're claiming that the fellow owes you 2 dinar, he owes you a shekel, and that's a result of your claim that the mashkon was worth only a shekel, and you had lent him a sela, which is 2 shekels. So the rabbi said, you swear how much it was worth as per your claim. Why do we want the malve to swear? Shema yishov azeh v'yotzi halo es apikonon. What we want to avoid is a type of, we'll call it a trap or a setup where the love would swear. We'll say the lover would swear his Torah obligation oath. Yeah, but and what will happen right after that? The malva will whip out the pikadon, will whip out the entrusted item, namely the mashkon, the collateral, and make a mockery of the lover, showing the public, showing the court, look at this false claim made by the Lofe. Up till this point, we have explained the Tanaic source. We've explained the issue of the oath that this source makes reference to. We said that it's referring to example number 2 in the source. And now let us remind ourselves of Rav Huna's din. Rav Huna said that someone who is entrusted with an article, even if he's willing to pay for it, he has to swear it's not in my possession. In this story with the Malve and the Love, we also have an element of Shomer. The Malve was entrusted with the Mashka. According to Rav Huna, when you're entrusted with the Mashkon, you're inevitably going to have to swear, it's not in my possession. I don't have it. Before we read on in the Gemara, let's think this out. If Rav Huna is correct, the Malve in our case is going to be swearing, I don't have it. If he's swearing I don't have it, then the whole fear expressed in the Tanaic source falls away. Now Rav Huna is an Amora. He's bound by the Tanaic source. But if Rav Huna's point is correct, that the Shomer, in this case the Malve, who was entrusted with the Mashkin, with the collateral, is swearing, I don't have it. So then where does the whole scenario, the suspected scenario that the Tanaic source raised, that the Malva will whip it out, making the Lova look bad? He's not whipping anything out. He swore he doesn't have it. Let's read on in the Gemara. Ve'im Isa, we're continuing at the top of the Lamed Hei. Ve'im Isa l'de Rav Huna, if Rav Huna's point is accepted, is correct, that the Shomer swears, I don't have it, well, in our case, kevon de mishtabe malve she'eino birshuso, since the malve, who was the shomer in effect on that mashkon, is swearing, I don't have it, it's not in my possession, hefi motzi mapiklo, how can he take it out? So from the fact that we are concerned that the malve, who's the shomer, will whip it out and show it to us, show us the entrusted article to us, it must be that there's no Rav Huna Shvua. That he's not, there's no swearing I don't have it. Can we possibly preserve Rav Huna in the face of this question? So as we go on in the Gemara, you notice diamonds. We have a structural note. These represent Shuvos al Kushya Harishona Sheik Shual Rav Huna. These are our answers to this first question that we've raised on Rav Huna, the first bowtie source. Omar Rabba, where the Girsa changes this to Rabba, and that you can see on the side that would be the more appropriate name to read over here. Sheyesh Eidim Shenisrafa. In general, Rav Huna's Shvua is to be made. In the Tanaic source, why is that Shvua not being made? Because there are witnesses that say it was burnt. And there's no need for a Shvua that it's not in his domain when witnesses are saying it was burnt. So of course it's not in his domain. I don't need any further evidence. So the Gemara asks, if the Tanaic source is speaking about that scenario, that it was burnt, well, Iyachi Mehecha Maisi La, from where is the Malva going to whip out the Mashkon if it's gone, it's burnt? So it's an unlikely description of the Tanaic source. that those are the circumstances. Hello, Amar Rav Yosef, Sheish Edim, Shenigdava. The reason in the Tanaic source that the Rav Huna Shvuah is not going to be made is because there's no need for his Shvuah there, because there are witnesses that the item was stolen. So if witnesses indicate it was stolen, it's not in the Malva's domain, so the Malva doesn't have to swear the Rav Huna oath. The Rav Huna oath, just to remind you, was Eino Birshusi. It's not in my possession. Well, the more I ask, well, self. Mehecho Maisila. The same question we raised before with regard to Rabbo's explanation, we raised with Rav Yosef's explanation. If it's stolen, so why does the source indicate that we want the Lova to swear? Because if the Malva swears, we want the Malva to swear, because if the Lova swears, the Malva might whip it out. But if you have witnesses that it was stolen, where's the Malva going to whip it out from? The Gemara says, in fact, witnesses could testify that it was stolen, and yet there is a fear that the Malva will produce the Mashkon, the Torah, who Maisi Law. He'll go out, he'll trouble himself, he'll extend himself and find it, find the thieves, get the mashkon, and if the Lova would swear his Doraisa Shvua, the Malva will end up making him look bad. The Gemara says, well, Ihachi, if that's the issue of Torah, Umaisilo ki mishtaba Malva, even if the Malva would swear how much the, and it's like we're saying he's supposed to do, if the Malva swears how much it is, Nami Litrach Loive Velesi, well, the Lova could trouble himself and recover his item and then show the Malva to be a liar and passel him to render him unfit. The Gemara says, no, that's of little concern to us. And then we have a long answer to defend Rav Yosef's point. Bishlamo Malve. I understand in the case of, with regard to the Malve, Yoda Man Ko'ail Venofik Bebesa. He knows who was going in and out of his house. Now, don't forget, there were witnesses that testified it was stolen. Are there chances that the Malve will recover the item and whip it out, making the Lova look bad if we keep the Shvuah by the Lova? Yes. That fear still exists, because the Malve knows who entered and exited his house, who could be a potential thief. V'yozav v'torach u'maisilo. He'll simply review all the people that visited his house, entered and left, and discover where the Mashkin is, recover it, and if the Lova will swear, the Malve will passel him, will reveal to the public that he's a liar. Ella, by whipping out the mashkon. Ella loive mi yoda man ayel venofik bebeise de malve. The loive, is there any chance that he's going to be able to recover the mashkon? He doesn't know who went in and out of the malve's house. So Rav Yosef's explanation to the Tanaic source, there's no need for the Rav Huna oath of Eino Birshusi, because witnesses say it was stolen, and therefore it's not in the Malva's house. Can the Malva still make the Lova look bad, having the Lova swear and the Malva producing the Mashkon? Yes. And that's because the Malva will find the Mashkon that was stolen, and he has the capacity of doing so. Abaye Omer. Abaye says that the oath of Rav Huna will be made, and even so, we want the Malva to swear regarding the value of the Mashkon. Abaye Omer, Gezera Shema Yit'oin V'yoymar Lo Achar Shvua Motzosia. You could have the following scenario that the Tanaic source comes to prevent. Rav Huna's Shvuah, namely, the Malva would swear I don't have the mashkon. Okay. If you swear I don't have the mashkon, so couldn't the, you'll say, couldn't the lovet swear? Why is there to swear regarding the value of the mashkon? Why is there a need for the malveh to swear regarding the value of the mashkon after he swore, I don't have it in my domain, it's not in my possession? The fear would be that after swearing, I don't have it in my possession, imagine the loveh would then swear as regarding the value. That malveh would then whip out the mashkon and say, oh, I just found it. I just now found it. After I swore it's not in my domain, I found it. In other words, he didn't, according to what he's claiming now, he didn't lie when he made the Rav Huna Shvua. Because at the time he made the Shvua, he's claiming it's not in my domain. And now I found it. And if the Lova would be the one to have sworn, the Malva at this point will expose the Lova as a liar and passel him by showing that the Mashkon is worth something else, worth something other than what the Lova claimed. Therefore, even though the Rav Huna Shvua is made, there is still reason for the concern of the Malva whipping out the Shvua, whipping out the Mashkon. Rav Ashi Omar. Rav Ashi says the source presents no problem for the Rav Huna din. Rav Ashi says zeh nishba v'zeh nishba. Zeh nishba she'eino birshuso. The Malva swears the Rav Huna Shvua, it's not in my domain. And then v'zeh nishba kama ho yeshove. And then the Lova will swear how much it was worth. And as far as Rav Ashi is concerned, you can see that he is not suspect of what Abaye presented. V'hochi ka'omar, and as far as the Tanaic source is concerned, you read it as follows. Mi nishba t'chila, in the case of the Lova who was moide b'miktas, who is the first one to swear? So Malva nishba t'chila, the Malva will swear first that it's not in his domain. Why do we want him to swear first that it's not in his domain? Shema yishov azeh, because we're afraid that the if the Lova would swear first as to its value, v'yotzi halo es hapikadon, and then the Malva would whip out the pikadon before having sworn that it's not in his possession. So first the Malva swears the Rav Huna Shvua, it's not in my possession, and now we're not fearful of any exposure by allowing the Lova to make his Torah obligated Shvua. Rav Huna bar Tachlifa Mishmei Derova. In the Rav Huna, this is not the Rav Huna, author of the Rav Huna Shvua, but this is a different Rav Huna, who says in the name of Rava, Reisha de Seifa Tiuftel Rav Huna. If a question is to be raised on Rav Huna, you'll find a question upon him from the beginning of the end. The beginning of the end, if you remember that Tanaic source, we divided into Roman numerals 1 and 2, from the beginning of Roman number 2 in the source, we have a question. Now we quote from that Reisha de Seifa, case 3 in the Tanaic source, which in the name of Rava, it is claimed that that will be a tiufta l'Rav Huna, a challenge to Rav Huna's din. What was Rav Huna's din? That a shomer, even if he pays for it, he has to swear it's not in my possession. What does it say in section 3 of the Tanaic source from our previous omid? Sela hilvisani olov. The lova is claiming that you loan me one sela, but shtayim hoyoshove. The mashkon was worth two sela. So you owe me one sela. V'haloi omer, and the malve says, lo ki, not so, elo sela hil visicho lov sela hoya shove. I loaned you a sela, and it, the mashkon, the collateral, was worth a sela. I don't owe you anything. Total denial. Potter. He, the malve, is potter, does not swear, because he is kofer bakol, total denial. And we explained earlier that when one is in total denial, he does not have to swear. Now, ve'im isa l'Rav Huna, if Rav Huna's din is correct, namely, that the malve will have to swear anyway that it's not in my possession, there's a concept that we're going to see in a moment called Gilgal Shvua, and that states that once you have to make a particular type of oath, we can latch onto that additional oaths, impose upon you additional oaths that otherwise could not have been imposed. In our case, looking at things at face value, you have a malva that's total denial of owing anything. No oath. He's a person that we cannot impose any oath on him regarding the value of the mashkon because he is totally denying. However, if you introduce Rav Huna and his rule that we impose an oath anyway that it's not in my possession, once an oath is obligatory on a person, we can latch onto that. We can attach to that other oaths that otherwise would not have been made. And what are we referring to when we say those other oaths that otherwise could not have been made? The kofer bakol oath. In this case, the oath regarding the value of the mashkon from the malve's perspective is in effect an oath that would be total denial by the lender swearing that the mashkon was worth a sela. He is in effect totally denying what the lova is trying to claim. And yet in the Tanaic source, the malva is not swearing at all. So now the Gemara, v'im isal Rav Huna, if Rav Huna's din is correct, migu de mishtaba malva she'eino birshuso, since the malva is swearing, it's not in my domain, the malva being like a shomer on the mashkon, shomers have to swear, it's not in my domain, lishtaba nami, skipping two words, kamo yoshoma, let him now swear how much it was worth. Let's read that again. Lishtaba nami a Gilgal Shvua, through the mechanism of Gilgal Shvua, that's the mechanism of being able to attach oaths that otherwise would not have been imposed but are now imposed because a previous oath is being made, a previous oath that can be imposed. So why does the source say that the malve is potter? The malve doesn't swear. What, just because he's denying the value, he's denying owing anything? So what? He has to swear, if Rav Huna's din is correct, he has to swear it's not in my possession. And then swear now, also, how much it was worth. Namely, it's worth, according to you, the total value of the loan that you extended. And therefore, I owe nothing. Omar Ravashi, Amriso Lishmaitse Kamei Rav Kahana. Ravashi says, I said this teaching to Rav Kahana, and it seemed that we have this we'll say this kasha on Rav Huna from the Tanaic source. The Omar Li. And Rav Kahana answered, Tehei b'mamino, meaning, let him be, let's say, believability was granted. That's a bit vague. What Rav Kahana is saying, that in this case, the Rav Huna Shvua is not being made. Not that we have a kasha on Rav Huna's din. In general, shomrim will have to swear that it's not in their possession. In this case, with the malveh and the loiveh granted believability. That's tehei b'manamino. Granted believability to the malveh to say, I don't have it. So once the loiveh, who's laying claim to money owed, but nevertheless grants believability, I believe him. He doesn't have to swear. In general, shomrim have to swear. But here, the loiveh is saying, I believe him when he says it's not in his domain. And therefore, there's no need for the malveh, i.e. shomer, to make the Rav Huna shvua. The Gemara asks, well, once we're getting into this kindly mode, questions are now raised. You can see we have a double underline marking, which indicates a series marking. And on the side, under our Mivneh heading, these are Kushos ala Tshuva Shenitan. These are questions on the answer that was given L'Kushya Hashniya al Rav Huna. In other words, we have the answer of Rav Kahana of Teheba Mamino. And now let's see if we can really live with that answer. So the Gemara asks, "Venehemne loive lamalve nami beho kama have shove." Why doesn't the loive already grant believability to the malve regarding the value of the mashkon? Why are they arguing with one another as to the value of the mashkon? If the loiveh is willing to believe the malveh that the mashkon is not in his domain, let the loiveh believe the malveh with regard to the value of the mashkon. The Gemara says, lo kim le begaveh. The malveh, in the eyes of the loiveh, doesn't really know the value of the mashkon. After all, it's something that he, the lender, received from the borrower. The borrower, it's his item. He extended the mashkon to the lender. The borrower knows the real value. Question. V'nehemne malve la love de kim le begave. Well, why doesn't the malve believe the love as to the value of the mashkon? After all, he knows how much his own things are worth. The Gemara says, lo mehemanle. The malve just doesn't believe the love. Question, umay shno loive de mehemon le la malve, umay shno malve de lo mehemon le la loive. Why this one-sidedness? Why is it that the loive has trust in the malve, believes the malve? That was with regard to the issue of not being in his domain. And why is it that the malve doesn't have any trust in the loive? The Gemara answers, loive mekayem be ba malve. The loiveh, in looking at the malveh, feels that the following verse describes him as tumas yishorim tanchem. The wholesomeness of the worthy, of the righteous, leads them. The explanation behind this we will see very shortly in the Rashi. But let's just finish the thought. Malveh mekayem beba loiveh. The malveh, in looking at the loiveh, loiveh didn't have money, needed to borrow money. Veselef boigdim yishodem. You can see these are psukim from Mishlei Perek Yud Aleph, Posuk Gimel. And now we look at the Rashi. The Rashi that we're looking at, you'll find in the upper third of the page. Loive mekayem b'malve. The loive, why does he trust the malve? Because he feels there's a fulfillment of the pasuk mikrozeh tumas rishoyim tumas yishorim tanchem. We mentioned tumas from a tamim, the wholesomeness of the yishorim, of the straight ones, of the righteous ones, leads them. Im loisha adam ne'eman v'yosher hu, if not for the fact that this malve is a ne'eman, is trustworthy and straight, lo hoyu ma'ashirin oisei min hashamayim, from heaven would not have granted him wealth. Shenamar tumas yishorim tanchem. In contrast, though, the pasuk makes reference to v'selech boydim yishadem. That's a reference to we'll call them the sinners are eventually crushed because of their falseness. Someone who is in contrast is not granted the wealth and is in need of borrowing money, so he is not viewed as someone trustworthy. And hence you can see this this difference between the two. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.